is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, well, this evening, our first hour, is going to be Open Lines Wednesday. So I am going to invite you to call here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I was just thinking, was it before we came to the studio, well, how could I open talking about? And I was thinking, of course, those words by George Santayana, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it, and Thomas Jefferson, who said that if a people expect to live both ignorant and free and a state of civilization, they expect what never was and never will be. So how do we understand what's going on in the world today? Well, we really have to understand the past, because there's nothing new under the sun. It's all happened before. And I was thinking back to when I first got involved in the so-called Patriot Movement. It was 1962, and I tuned into the wrong television program. I wanted to watch a program that was very popular in 1962, called The Naked City. It was the story of New York detectives, and I remember it always opened with that phrase, there are 8 million stories in the Naked City. And, of course, then you went into this detective story. They were usually pretty good, but instead I tuned to the wrong program, and there was an old man who was talking about what was going on in the world, and he said that Fidel Castro had been brought to power by our government with the full knowledge that he was a communist. Now, I remember when Fidel Castro came to power in January of 1959, and he was an anti-communist, and he came to the United States, and he addressed Congress, and he hugged President Nixon, and he said, I'm going back home to fight communism. And then all of a sudden, this man who was such a staunch anti-communist was known as a communist, and I never quite could understand what was going on, but anyway, I certainly was a little curious in 1962 how it was that this anti-communist was suddenly a communist, and it really didn't make any sense. And this old man was saying that the CIA had funded him knowing he was a communist and brought him to power knowing he was a communist, and furthermore, the media in the United States was controlled, that the United States was not a democracy, it was a republic, and there was all the difference in the world between a republic and a democracy, and democracies always ended up in dictatorship. And as I sat there transfixed by this old man talking, and he really wasn't that good a talker, but there was sort of a ring of truth in what he said. And, you know, things happen. We don't always know why. I know I've had people tell me that they were just driving down the road and they heard one of our radio programs, and they started out thinking we were a little crazy, but they were intrigued, and maybe they went home and listened to the program and listened to it the following week. And gradually, after a period of time, they came to realize what I was saying was true. And that's exactly what happened to me back in 1962. I began to check out the facts, and I began to read. And, of course, as a young, successful orthopedic surgeon, I was spending my evenings reading books and reading histories and reading a book a day, trying to understand what was going on in the world. Could it possibly be that everything I believed was false? Well, it was very shortly after that why we had the assassination of President Kennedy, and then we were involved in Vietnam, and we'll spend a little time talking about Vietnam. Well, of course, we really entered the Vietnam War. We had troops in Vietnam before President Kennedy was killed. But after that, why, of course, we We had the Gulf of Tonkin incident, and everybody knew the Gulf of Tonkin incident had really occurred, and that's why we had to begin committing our troops to Vietnam and fighting in Vietnam. But the trouble is now, many, many years later, now some almost 40 years later, we find the Gulf of Tonkin incident never occurred. There was no reason to have sent our troops over there, and for 58,000 American boys to have died, and 1 million South Vietnamese and 2 million North Vietnamese, it was all contrived, it was all a lie, but back in 1964, I didn't understand that. And I think, like with most Americans, I believed that there really was a war between capitalism and communism, that we were really faced off against an enemy that wanted to destroy us. I did not understand at that time that the communists had been financed from the very inception in Russia by people here in the United States, and the American Communist Party and movement and philosophy was being financed here in the United States by our great tax-exempt foundations and by people of great wealth. It really seemed so far from being possible. It wasn't until I read books like The Foundations, Their Power and Influence, which I first read about 1964, a book based upon the Rees Committee investigations of the great tax-exempt foundations back in 1953 and 1954, which pointed out that the great tax-exempt foundations, Rockefeller, Ford, and Carnegie, were actually funding communism here in the United States and communist philosophy. In fact, they had been funding the communist propaganda in the United States, which was responsible for the American State Department, or perhaps reflected by the American State Department, cutting off aid to the nationalist Chinese, putting an arms embargo on the nationalist Chinese, and helping the communist Chinese to take power in China back in 1949. And, of course, nothing's new. We just did the same thing with Nepal within the last few months, and we backed. We put an arms embargo on the Nepal government so that the Maoists could enter the government. And, of course, for all intents and purposes, Nepal is well on the way to becoming a communist dictatorship thanks to American foreign policy and the fact that most Americans do not understand that time after time why we put arms embargoes on our friends and brought our enemies to power, which doesn't make any sense unless, of course, there's another agenda. And we're going to be back here in a few minutes. We've got Joe calling from Wisconsin, and maybe someday evening we'll have time to just give you the whole incredible story of the background. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is Open Lines Wednesday, and right now we have Joe calling from Wisconsin, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And as every Wednesday evening, our first hour is simply Open Lines Wednesday. Hi, Joe. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, Dr. Stan. I'd like to start off with the silver manipulation and then talk about the First Amendment manipulation.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
I've noticed that over the past 2 weeks, the price of silver dropped. It plummeted over $2 in maybe 3 days.
Right.
And that signaled me that they're doing some very serious, market manipulation, trying to get people to reelect the current incumbents. I'm not going to say either party, but they just want everybody placated so that they just go along with the program.
I think that's a very, very a good estimate. I think the same way that they manipulated the price of oil down, that they're manipulating the stock market up. It is all a matter of perception. And when the market's up, when the price of gasoline is down, and when it looks like gold and silver aren't going to be doing too much, why, people are happy and they'll vote for the incumbents, and they just as soon have the incumbents back there.
Well, I don't know how they can keep that balloon expanded, but the other topic I wanted to talk about was sort of running out of resources to fight my own battles, where there's a lawyer on campus. I use public facilities for internet access, but since I'm well informed, they have since termed me hostile or harassing and intimidating. So they use those two in conjunction, and they can pretty much shut down your First Amendment. I've been through several different avenues. And
so when who is shutting down your First Amendment rights?
It's a concerted effort between the campus lawyer.
What campus are you talking about?
University of Wisconsin.
Are you a student? How are you to work there?
I was a enrolled student last year, not this year. But since the war heated up, I'm thinking I'll wait until things either blow over or go extremely poor. If things blow over, I'll re-enroll. I'm able to get tuition reimbursement because I'm a veteran. But they're mainly interested in people who have rights only if they're currently enrolled.
All right, so what are you concerned about, access to their computers on campus?
Well, since everyone pays for it, theoretically, everyone owns it. It's just that priority is given to the staff, faculty, and students, which I agree with, and I've never interfered with any of that. However, they don't disagree with my use. They just disagree with me doing it, period.
All right, well, I would simply go to some, there are many, many groups out there that do, of course, pretend to protect people's rights, and you could certainly contact one of those organizations if you're having a difficulty as far as that's concerned.
Well, I did contact Pacific Justice, and they put me on their mailing list, but I don't think...
Why don't you get your computer yourself so you don't have to be relying on somebody else? You can certainly pick up a used one for a couple of $100.
Well, the thing being, I'd also have to pay for the internet connection and everything else.
Right. Well, the thing is, if they're going to harass you, why? If you really want to get onto the internet, if that's the real issue, and you want internet access, why? You certainly may have to pay for it, but it is certainly a very convenient thing. And if you have to go to the university and they're going to harass you, why? I think you're going to spend an awful lot of energy, fighting windmills. I would think you'd get a computer. There's very inexpensive internet access. And certainly you can get that. And, you're talking $10, $15 a month. With certain of the discount ones, they seem to work pretty well. So, Joe, I sympathize with you, but, I think that this is not an issue, really, that you're going to solve here tonight.
Well, there are other people who have become students enrolled, and they're being harassed nonstop. So I don't think that would be a solution to the problem anyway.
All right, fine. Well, thanks very much for calling. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, we were basically telling a little bit about the Vietnam War. And at the time when the Vietnam War came, a lot of people certainly supported the administration, the Johnson administration, because we were told about the domino effect. If we did not, of course, defeat the communists in Vietnam, they were going to take Cambodia and Thailand and Laos. And then it was only a matter of time before they took Australia and New Zealand. And then the communists were going to take, next thing would be San Francisco. We had to defeat communism in the Far East, just exactly as today we have to defeat terrorism. And, of course, I will have to admit, like many people, I was very emotionally involved in the war and felt terrible about the American boys who were dying. We didn't talk too much about the civilians who were dying over in Vietnam. Just the Americans, and I think that we should be concerned about American boys dying. But then, of course, they began to get stories coming back about the fact that we weren't allowed many times to hold the land that we took. We'd send our boys in. They'd take a hill, and then they'd be pulled back, and then they'd have to go and take the hill again, and that didn't really quite make sense. And then there was an anti-war movement, and of course the anti-war movement was funded by the communists here in the United States. I knew that because I subscribed to the communist publications then, as I do today. And those people who sided with the anti-war movement were on the far left, and we didn't like them because they were communists. At the time, I didn't realize, of course, that the anti-war movement during the Vietnam War was being funded by exactly the same people who were pushing the war. It was all part of this whole idea of a controlled opposition, which is exactly, in many respects, what's happening today. We have certainly a lot of good
people who are very concerned about the war who were involved, but the major, many of the major organizations that are supposing the war in the Middle East are certainly funded by the establishment and by the foundations and by the very people who are pushing the war, because you always want a controlled opposition. Well, then as we began to evaluate the war in Vietnam, we found out that lots of times our planes, our Air Force planes, if they saw a MiG plane on the ground in North Vietnam, they weren't allowed to fire on it. They actually couldn't fire on a plane unless it was up in the air. And actually firing on them, they couldn't even fire on the plane if it was in the air. But, you know, they couldn't, they had to wait until they were attacked. They couldn't hit the anti-aircraft batteries, North Vietnamese anti-aircraft batteries, unless they were firing at our planes. That didn't make sense. We weren't allowed to bomb the supply lines, the port at Haiphong, or mine the port at Haiphong, or hit the trail lines leading out of Haiphong, over which the weapons came that were being used to kill our boys in South Vietnam. We weren't allowed to bomb the hydroelectric plants in North Vietnam, and simply bombing those and shutting them down would have plunged the whole country into darkness. They weren't hydroelectric, but they were electric generating plants. And then we weren't allowed to bomb the dikes, and we would have flooded North Vietnam. That would have ended the war. Oh, we were allowed to bomb Haiphong, the capital of North Vietnam, a little bit now and then. And then any time it looked like we were having an effect, we had to stop bombing. We weren't allowed to stop the ships that were going up the Mekong River that were supplying supplies. We weren't allowed to bomb the Ho Chi Minh Trail that was in Laos and Cambodia. We couldn't go into Laos and Cambodia legally. And many times our military actually violated the rules put forward by our government, because our military wanted to win the war. They thought they were there to win. They didn't understand it was a make-believe war. It was only later that I came to realize that American corporations and banks and various government agencies were actually funding the communists in Russia, who were funding the North Vietnamese. The Russians were building the weapons and the MiG planes and the sophisticated anti-aircraft batteries that were being used to kill our boys. We built the Kama River plant in Russia, the largest truck-producing plant anywhere in the world during the Vietnam War. We financed it. We built it to build the trucks that were then taken to Vietnam to carry the supplies down the Ho Chi Minh Trail that were used to kill our boys. And the same thing was true with the Fiat Motor Plant. We built the Fiat Motor Plant. We financed it in Russia. We lent them countless billions of dollars so they would have the money to keep the war going. But you see, here in America, nobody knew what was really going on. We honestly believed that what we were told was true. We were trying to win the war, and it was simply the media that was against it. You remember the Pentagon Papers, that first inkling we had that the Gulf of Tonkin incident was a fraud in Daniel Ellsberg. Did you know Daniel Ellsberg came from the Council on Foreign Relations? In my estimation, this whole thing was contrived from the very beginning. When the time finally came that it was time to pull out, why, those papers were published by the New York Times, and then Daniel Ellsberg was put on trial for leaking confidential information, and it was all the people from the Council on Foreign Relations that had created the war that now were going to testify in Ellsberg's defense. And, you know, here we are, 40 years later, and there's Daniel Ellsberg, 30 years later. Daniel Ellsberg, of course, active in the anti-war movement today. And it's like deja vu all over again. We're involved in a war in Iraq. We can't win the war. Why? Because we never have enough troops, because we don't have adequate armor for our troops, because, of course, they have not armed the Iraqi army. Remember, all during Vietnam, we were going to get the Vietnamese to fight the war. Well, of course, over in Iraq, we have to get the Iraqis to fight the war. But if you have read the articles by Major General Paul Eaton, who's now speaking out against Donald Rumsfeld, you'll find out he wasn't allowed to anything to build up the Iraqi army. He wasn't given supplies for the Iraqi army. Everything was a fraud. And Major General Paul Eaton has left the army to speak out against, of course, the way he was hamstrung. We didn't want an Iraqi army. We wanted to keep our boys over in Iraq. And they continue fighting and bleeding and suffering and dying. Well, we've got Tom calling from Chicago here. Hi, Tom. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, isn't it unusual, Dr. Stan, that our boys and women as well, going house to house in Iraq, disarming the people, we're told that these are the enemies, and here the Sunnis and the Shiites, if our troops were pulling back into a safer zone and just letting them battle it out, but we're made the targets. It's such a farce. It's just like Vietnam. It's Vietnam all over again.
It's like deja vu all over again.
Right. And Afghanistan, the same thing. Here today we're told that the Musharraf was actually helping the Al-Qaeda in the border areas, and they're inside of Pakistan big time. And the American people are so stupid and so dumbed down that they don't see all this stuff.
Well, you see, it's so impossible, really, to believe. Just as during the Vietnam War, we financed Russia so they could finance the North Vietnamese who were killing our boys, so today, why, of course, the Al-Qaeda and the Taliban are operating openly in Afghanistan. And we're told it's in the border area. And we're told that Musharraf, who we're giving some $3 billion a year to, you know, just can't possibly do anything about it. But we've got to keep him in power, because if we don't keep him in power, the bad guys will take over. And that's why we have to give him the money. And then, of course, they're in Afghanistan. They have somewhere between 12 and 20,000 these schools, these madras schools, where they actually are indoctrinating the youth there in this radical form of Islam, so they'll be a future Al-Qaeda fighters, just exactly as during the 1980s, the USAID, the United States Agency for International Aid, AUSAID program, put up $51 million for Afghan textbooks to indoctrinate the youth there in this radical form of Islam. And if our listeners are out there and they'd like to get a copy of the article that deals with that from the Washington Post, it's called The ABCs of Jihad. How during the Afghan war we were indoctrinating the youth with this radical form of Islam. People say, oh, these radical Islamists, terrible, they hate us. We are the ones who financed this whole movement. During the Afghan war, we were passing out copies of the Quran to the Mujahideen, getting them indoctrinated in this radical form of Islam.
Dr. Stan, I hate to interrupt you, but look at Wahhabism. Look at the Saudis. The best enemies money could buy. The Rockefellers set them up with all the oil, Aramco and all the rest. And you're looking right now, the Taliban were the good guys against the Soviet Union. And once the Russian oil started flowing and they built the pipeline and the Taliban didn't take the offer they couldn't refuse, as the Saudis had taken and Saddam Hussein refused to take, you know, it's just amazing how we're not told any of these things. And all of CNN and CBS and all the rest of the elite media, they keep us so stupid. If we don't have the American people...
Hold on right there, Tom. I'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We have Tom calling from Chicago. This is Open Lines Wednesday. If you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Tom is very, very concerned by the fact that actually Al-Qaeda and Taliban are operating in northern Pakistan and, of course, infiltrating into Afghanistan, where they're killing American and NATO forces and then going back into Pakistan and then reforming. Now, it takes a lot of money for military actions. You don't just have a few isolated people and put them in the field. You have to have food for them, you have to have training for them, you have to have weapons for them, and believe me, these are well-supplied troops. So who's putting up the money? Why, it's coming from Pakistan. And who's providing the money to Pakistan? Why, the United States is providing money to Pakistan. And one of the most incredible statements recently came out, and I would like to see if we have it, written by Arne de Borgrave, who is really one of the best correspondents of rights for the Washington Times. But he points out that, you know, certainly all during the Afghan War, the United States financed this radical movement. In other words, financed the Mujahideen, this radical Islamic movement. And then after that, why, of course, the ISI, which he said is simply controlled by the FBI and the CIA, financed Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. And that's what the American people don't understand. It was the CIA and Saudi Arabia and ISI, Pakistani intelligence, that worked together to create this whole Al-Qaeda movement. Why? Because we needed an enemy. You need an enemy to rally the people behind it. This is what's so difficult for people to understand, but it's as old as time itself. In fact, Plato wrote in the Republic, when the tyrant has defeated the enemy by treaty or conflict, and there's nothing further to fear, then he's always out rounding up a new enemy so he can keep the people rallied behind him. And that's exactly what this is all about. We need an enemy to rally the people. And right now, for instance, we have satellites up in the sky. They're not spying on the Russians. They're spying on you. If you have a farm, they're counting the number of cattle that you have. If you have a farm, they're monitoring your crops. We're using these spy satellites to spy on the American people. See, I always thought they were supposed to be spying on the Russians. Why are they spying on the American people? Because, of course, Russia and communism was never the enemy. Anybody who doubts that needs to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or Professor Sutton's book, Western Technology and Soviet Economic Development, or the book we carry, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. Communism in Russia has been financed since its inception by corporates and individuals and our own Federal Reserve System. Communism in China is being funded today. All you need to do is look and see who's pouring billions of dollars into communist China, building up the best enemy money could buy. And the American people are totally oblivious to what's going on. Tom, go ahead.
Dr. Stan, we could also go to as you always so aptly put, to Carol Quigley. We saw one of his people, so to speak, at his best there on Sunday, Bill Clinton doing his best imitation of getting red and getting all upset and having this stooge, Mike Wallace's son, making him look good, making him look awfully good as a real tough man. And we know when he was president how the elite made him look like he was a darling. We had surpluses. Now, under a conservative administration, we've got all these deficits.
Isn't that amazing?
They just play us like a fiddle. It's amazing. Just as an aside, Dr. Stan, you were mentioning about oil, that the gas prices after the election would be going through the roof. And we saw a little bit of that today with the increase in the oil price. But the euphoria that's among the people, thinking that the pressure is off. I was in Tennessee and Kentucky a couple of weeks ago, and gasoline was down to $2.14.
Well, I think that probably the prices will stay down until the election, and then they'll be allowed to go up again. But they're playing games with our mind. They're controlling our reality. Until people understand that, until people understand that almost everything going on today is manipulated, and as Edward Bernays had said so well in his book Propaganda, published in 1928, anybody who'd like to see the pages, we'll send them to them. He said, you know, we are governed, our minds are molded, our tastes are formed, or ideas suggested largely by men we have never heard of. And that's how you control a population. Hey, Ray, thanks so very much.
Thank you.
Good night. God bless.
Well, this is Arthur Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is... going to be you out there in the listening audience. It's Open Line Wednesday. Give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Monterey Bay area. Hey, we got Ray on the line from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty good.
Question or comment?
You were talking about Vietnam, and I kept thinking about Robert McNamara. And he was a member of the cult hierarchy, wasn't he?
He certainly is. In fact, he is today a member of the board of directors of the World Future Society. Until we began talking about their logo being a circle with three sixes, it was a circle with three sixes. He's there with Barbara Marks Hubbard, who's one of the leading occultists in the world, and certainly a Marie Strong, who, of course, is deeply involved with this whole world occult movement. So McNamara is certainly one of the occult movement leaders, and, of course, that's what Vietnam was partly all about. It was a human sacrifice, the sacrifice of millions and millions of lives, unnecessarily. These people revel in this sort of thing, and McNamara sent our boys to Vietnam to fight and bleed and suffer and die, but never, never to be allowed to win that war.
Mm.
And we financed the very people who were killing our boys.
And he would go over there and he'd tell the generals, that, you know, don't do this, don't, you know.
Well, the rules of engagement, Senator Goldwater was eventually able to get them and publish them in the Congressional Record, and most people don't understand. We were not allowed to win the war. I personally talked to Ambassador Sullivan, William H. Sullivan, and, of course, to Major General, pardon me, to the full general.
And Ellsworth Bunker?
Beg your pardon?
Ellsworth Bunker?
No, this was William H. Sullivan. He was the American ambassador to Laos.
Oh, okay.
And both he and General Lewis Walter, four-star Marine general, told me we could have won the war in two months. We were never allowed to. And Sullivan, who himself was a member of the CFR, said he never understood why we didn't try to win the war in Vietnam. So a lot of people in the CFR really aren't very smart. They don't understand what they're involved in. But then we got a lot of conservatives who are manipulated as well. Okay, anything else, Ray?
Yeah, you know, it seems to me, I was talking to a woman the other day, and she brought out an interesting point, that all these people like Clinton, Bill Clinton, all the rest of them, Condoleezza Rice, all these people are in the same club.
That's right.
They're in the money club. They're all together on this.
And, of course, remember, Bill Clinton got a $10 million advance for his memoirs. That's a payoff, ladies and gentlemen. That's simply a payoff for services rendered. And this is how it works. And you need to get my material on the Trilateral Commission really to understand who really runs America. Hey, thanks so much for calling.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And we've got Beth calling from Spokane. Hi, Beth. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan. I'm doing pretty good.
Okay, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I'd like some information on fluoride, because I was at a baby store earlier this day, and there was a man there with his little two-month-old girl. He was talking to the cashier about she just got her shots the day before, and so she was feeling a little down. Then he said that when they gave her fluoride. Now, they give her fluoride in the little droplet form in the food.
Right.
And when they give her a drop of fluoride in the food, she won't eat it.
Well, I think she's a lot smarter than he is, then.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you about fluoride. This is one of the biggest scams in the world. I mean, fluoride has been known for years for the psychological impact. In fact, you know what Prozac is, or Luvox? You've probably heard of it. They're psychotropic drugs. The active ingredient it is fluoride. I mean, Hitler actually fluoridated the water in the occupied countries during the Second World War. And the Soviets fluoridated the water in the Gulag because they knew it would sedate the people. Fluoride's an excellent suppressant of mental function. There are all sorts of scientific studies, and if you want to check what I'm saying, I hope you'll challenge me. You go on the Internet and type in fluoridealert.org. Now, don't go to fluoridealert.com because they've set up a parallel website to confuse you. Fluoridealert.com is the American Dental Association telling you how wonderful fluoride is. Fluoridealert.org is the website that will tell you the truth,
that they're poisoning our children and destroying their minds. Fluoride certainly has an impact on fertility, and there are a number of studies that show the impact on fertility. It actually decreases the sperm count, it decreases sperm motility, it increases the incidence of Down's disease. But in large studies, it's specifically done by Dr. Frenny, F-R-E-N-I, he found that in areas where they had fluoridated water, they had lower fertility. The higher the level of fluoride, the lower the fertility, the lower the fluoride, the higher the fertility. So this is being used for fertility control. It is also used to destroy the minds of our children. And people say, well, how could that be? And I would simply point out, look at our children today. When they graduate from the fourth grade and we give them competitive tests with other children from other countries, our kids don't do very well. By the time they get to the eighth grade, they do poorly, and by the time they graduate from high school, and they test our children on average with children from other countries, we're at the bottom of the list, and we really can't compete worldwide. They've destroyed the brains of our children. In China, where they actually have done extensive studies on this, and this is all documented on the websites, and I'll give you some of them where you can actually go if you want to, they have actually found that in areas where the water is fluoridated, there are no geniuses. There's just none. There are geniuses in other areas, but none there. And you have a lot more kids down around 70 or 80% IQ, lot of imbeciles and morons. It has an impact on your thyroid. It has an impact certainly on your bones and softens your bones. It has an impact that creates arthritis. It affects the heart. In fact, in the original area where this was actually studied in Newburgh, New York, they had twice the incidence of heart disease they did in the control area. But this is all covered in a book we carry called The Fluoride Deception.
Let me interrupt you, Dr.
Go ahead.
Okay, I need some information in case I run into this again. I'd like to be able to give us some information on fluoride.
All right, fine. The plus place. Do you have access to a computer?
Yes.
Well, fluoridealert.org, O-R-G. But one of the best sites you can go to is www.NTEU280.org.
NTEU280.org.
That stands for National Treasury Employees Union. Now, these are actually the scientists and the lawyers and the engineers who work for the Environmental Protection Agency. And they have a website, and they represent about 11 unions, and their statement, they're trying to tell the American people, they have the letters they've written to the members of Congress say they're poisoning our people. And then the letters they've sent to the EPA, Superior, saying, you're poisoning the people. Why are you doing this? And then if you read some of the articles, Dr. Hersey's testimony, other things up there, you'll get the references to what we're talking about. And we do have an excellent syllabus on this called The Hidden Agenda, but you can get so much of this information free of charge at the fluoridealert.org website. Go there. Why are they poisoning our children? Because we're dealing with wicked and evil people. When you understand that, there are people who really want to destroy the minds of our children. Then it all begins to make sense. And if that man is giving his child, you know, fluoride drops, and, you know, even the government will admit that you should not be giving children fluoride drops. They're not doing it anymore.
Where can I get that information right there?
Well, that, basically, that actually came out at the CDC. And if I could suggest, we have a syllabus. It's called The Hidden Agenda. It has all the scientific studies you would ever need to know. It's called The Hidden Agenda. It comes with a talk on The Hidden Agenda, and let me suggest it's an excellent source of information. The websites I've given you are excellent. If you want to see it all consolidated into one little area in the syllabus, The Hidden Agenda, they're poisoning and destroying the minds of our children. We'll even have the pages out of Bertrand Russell's book, who talks about, this is a book, The Impact of Science on Society, where he says, through the use of diet and injections and injunctions, we will mold the minds of the children so there will be no possibility that they will ever be able to rise up or have any opinion other than what their leaders want them to have. That comes from page, as I remember, 53 or 50 or 53. But we have actually got permission to reproduce those pages. They're right there in the syllabus. We're dealing with organized evil, Beth, and you need to have the information, and you need to be able to get it to people. But those two websites are an excellent place to start, and then, of course, go to Radio Liberty and get all of our information. We've got tape sets, we've got videos, we've got the syllabus, all the information you'll ever need to know.
Because it seemed to me that he was killing his little girl, you know?
He's destroying her mind. Oh, she'll grow up, but she will never have the accomplished what she might have had she not been poisoned by the use of fluoride. Do you know what the active ingredient in rat poison is?
Fluoride?
Fluoride. Thanks so much for calling, Beth.
Okay.
Good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go to... I think we have... Is this Kevin calling from Texas? Or is this Dan calling from Coeur d'Alene?
This is Dan from Coeur d'Alene.
Okay, fine. Well, then I'll ask Kevin from Texas to hang on. Dan, do you have a question or comment?
I grew up in the Northern California area. Been there, flooded in the water. So I'll try to muddle through this with my 70 to 80 IQ.
Maybe you would have had 180. Maybe you only got 160 now.
I could only imagine. I was curious about the satellite that the government's using to monitor us. I'm just curious, who is watching the screens and doing the monitoring? It must be a massive population to do that.
Well, don't you know that they actually do monitor in the fields here in the United States? Yeah, they have...
So who's actually watching the video?
Probably the NSA, the National Security Agency.
So how many people do you think that is?
Oh, they've got 100,000 people who work there, NSA. Don't you know about the National Security Agency, the super secret agency?
Yeah. I didn't know that they were all sitting all day watching.
Well, I didn't say that. I didn't say they were all sitting there, did I?
Oh, well,
I said they had about 100,000 people working at NSA. But you see, you're trying to twist my words.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, yes, I said they were all sitting there watching the screens. No, I said they had about 100,000 people working there.
Oh, that's nice.
And
well,
of course, what they do is they record all of this on videos, and I'm sure the computers can get a great deal of information, but they actually can watch everything going on in our country. And, of course, they do this in other countries as well. Not only that, the NSA monitors all of our telephone calls. They do it with computers. And they monitor the emails, they monitor the faxes, and then the computers go through and pick out certain words. And they've been doing this for probably 20 years under something known as Project Echelon.
Well, Dr. Stan, we've got to rise up and take over the government. How do we do this?
We educate people who are sincere about what's going on and really want to make a difference, and the first thing is to educate the American people.
I think we got to take up arms and
why would you make a stupid statement like that? I mean, that's the last thing in the world we want to do is to take up arms, unless that is what you want, martial law, because that's exactly what the enemies of freedom want. They would love to have people take up arms. Our job is to educate people. Are you intentionally trying to make stupid statements?
I'm not.
Why would you suggest we take up arms? I mean, what chance do you think you would have against the military establishment that they have now, with all sorts of sophisticated weapons that can track people down? And I mean, that is such a ridiculous statement to make. And I just wonder if you're trying to actually foment that sort of an armed resurrection. What we need is to educate the American people.
Well, let's say we all are educated and we all understand things that you've taught us, and you know that we're figuring out these things. Then what do we do once we get to that point? Because we're just sitting ducks if we don't take action.
Well, I think that what we have to do, of course, is get people to the polls, get people to run for political office, and we have to be sure we get honest elections. We've got to do away with the electronic voting machines, and I'm suggesting everybody vote absentee. At least that way they have to count your votes.
How can we trust the candidates that they're not part of the black circle or the... We're not part of them.
Well, actually, many of them are. So what you need to do is find good people. What are you doing politically, actually, to find good candidates and to back him? Have you ever run for political office?
I haven't.
All right. Well, maybe you ought to get educated, and what you either get yourself to run or get other good people to run who fear the Lord and will do what's right to try to reclaim our nation. But the last thing we want to do is to follow the suggestion of taking up arms.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else, Dan?
I'm in fluoride induced, so I don't think very clearly.
Dan, do you know why are you laughing at it?
Have you read the scientific studies?
No, I completely believe you. I'm sure they're true. I'm just funning a little bit here.
All right, fine. Okay.
Thanks, Dr. Stan.
Thanks so much, Dan.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Kevin calling from Texas. And again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Kevin. How are you doing?
I'm fine, Dr. Stan. Hey, I really liked William Federer the other night talking about the religion of Islam. That was very informative.
He's a great guy, a good personal friend, and I love William Federer. He's certainly one of my favorite guests.
I want to say that because some of the radio talk guys I've heard, they've kind of gone so far, you know, being anti-Zionist, that they're like now they're starting to think that, you know, Islam is good and is innocent and never did anything bad, you know, and like, you know, that's how far they're going, some of the guys.
You're absolutely right. And what you're saying now is a beautiful example of mind manipulation. And what they want to do is get a lot of people to hate the Jews. And then they want to get a lot of people to hate the Muslims. And then they're going over to the Muslim countries, and they're broadcasting on Al Jazeera, the satellite. And incidentally, you know that Al Jazeera, you can get it up here over the United States on Telstar 9, Telstar 5, which is ours. Why is our government allowing this hate-filled satellite, the Arab terrorist satellite system, to be broadcasting in the United States? Well, mm-hmm. I think that's a good question. But this whole idea is to get the Muslims to hate the Christians, to get the Christians to hate the Jews, and that's how you get a war going.
And then they, in America today, the Democrats, you know, on the Air America, they blame conservative Christians for Bush. It's Christians' fault for Bush now. Have you heard that one?
Oh, I certainly have. But the trouble is that some of our Christian leaders are going right along with this, and they've been misled. In fact, there was a program, it was 8 o'clock this morning. I didn't get a chance to get onto it, but it was a conference call with the Council on Foreign Relations, where the Council on Foreign Relations is talking about how a religion is going to direct our country in the future. Now, of course, these people come from an entirely different perspective, but they will be quite willing to use Christianity and discredit Christianity as Christian leaders are actually encouraging this coming war with Iran. And I think this is the most foolish thing in the world we could be doing.
Yeah, you have John Hagee's out there demanding we drop bombs. You know, I was at church. I go to a Baptist church in Austin, and I started asking my friends. I said, you know, who would Jesus bomb?
Who would he bomb first, right?
You know, instead of what would Jesus do, but like, who would he bomb? And
I mean,
they're all fooled.
If we are going to, of course, to try to destroy the Muslim movement, how many Muslims are we going to have to kill? We criticize the Muslims for, you know, try to spread the Muslim faith by the sword. Sounds to me like we're going to try to stop it, spread it by bombing them. We've killed over 130,000 Iraqis so far, bringing them democracy. 101,800,000 Iraqis have fled. Those who had any money could get out or have left. And, I mean, the other people are dying over there at a tremendous rate, and there's no electricity most of the time, and there's no water a lot of the time, and there are no jobs, and the people live in constant fear. Is this really a Christian thing to have done? I mean, we could have, once we had taken Baghdad, all we had to do was simply turn the government over to the existing military. The military hated Saddam Hussein. And they had a structure of society, and they had a police force, and they had a structured society. And instead of that, Paul Bremer from the Council on Foreign Relations, who incidentally worked with Kissinger and Associates, Paul Bremer went over as the presidential envoy and dissolved the Iraqi army, dissolved the Iraqi police force, dissolved the Iraqi civil service, and created the chaos you see today. Now, then, of course, Major General Paul Eaton was appointed by the military to rebuild the Iraqi army. And, of course, he's written a book. We have the articles from the New York Times where he says, you know, I was given 60 men to build an army for a nation of 25 million. I had no cadre at all. I had no sergeants. I had no non-commissioned officers. He said trying to build an army without non-commissioned officers and training facilities is like trying to put up a tent without tent poles. You can't do it. And every effort to rebuild the Iraqi army so that they could, take over and so we could pull our troops out has been blocked. And you have to ask yourself, why would our leaders in the Pentagon do that unless they wanted the chaos that's there today?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Out of chaos comes order, right? That's the New World Order motto.
Well, I'm sure you're absolutely right, but even more than that, I fear that this is going to be used as a base for our coming war with Iran and Syria
mm-hmm.
and the rest of the Muslim world. Because don't believe we're not going after Saudi Arabia and those other countries and plunge the world eventually into World War III. And why would any rational person want to do that? Because we're not dealing with rational people. We're dealing with people, I believe, that, of course, worship a different God and have a different dream and a vision of the world. And their loyalty is not to the United States, but to an internationalist dream. Hey, look, thanks very much for calling.
Hey, Dr. Smith.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Let's see who we have on this line. Hi, who do we have?
It's Michael. I called before, from Ireland.
Okay. Hi, Michael. How are you?
Okay. I agree with what you say, basically, about this artificial vicious circle. But on a previous program, you mentioned that the Muslims were basically generally peaceful and that before you stirred them up, and that's probably got truth to it. But I some years ago, read the Quran. I read it, two different translations, and I studied it in a course in London given by the Anglican Church, and it's one of the most monstrous books I've ever read in my life.
And you're absolutely right. In fact, we carry a book called The Prophet of Doom, Islam, the Prophet of Doom, and we have a four-tape set for the author of that. You're right. Certainly the Quran is terrible, and the teachings of Muhammad we would totally disagree with, but that doesn't mean that the average Muslim today is violent, although there is increasingly a tremendous amount of hostility that's growing. And as the recent intelligent essay that has only been released here in the last couple of days has said, what we're doing over there is making more people go into this radical form of Islam. But you're absolutely right.
I agree. But I just want to make one comment. They maintain the Quran is the word of God, and it was eternally true, and it cannot be changed, and it's et cetera, et cetera. But there's one doctrine or that was taught in this course, and it's called abrogation. And half the Quran was taken from Muhammad's sayings when he was in Mecca under persecution, and in that he seems very tolerant. And the other half was in Medina when he was at the head, and it's very intolerant. And verses in one blatantly abrogate the other. And if the Quran, as they say, is eternally true, how can one eternally abrogate the other? That's eternal madness.
Of course, you and I know that. And what we need to do is try to convince the Muslims of this and bring them to a faith in our Lord. But we're not going to do it by bombing them or dropping nuclear bombs over there.
I agree.
The solution to the world's problems is our Lord Jesus Christ.
I agree, and when 9/11 took place, I had all sorts of real big problems, so I couldn't concentrate on it.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've got Michael calling from Ireland, and he was just telling us that he studied the Quran. He feels that it's totally contradictory, and there are two parts of it, one peace-loving and one violence-loving. Michael, we're out of time. Do you have a parting thought before we let you go?
What really started me to thinking is when I heard Bush say it was a noble religion. Islam is a noble religion. And he's Christian. I said, how on earth could that be true?
Well, it really can't be true, as you well know. God bless you. Thank you so much for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. And we're going to have to, I'll tell Leo we can't get it right to him right now, because this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will consider joining the Radio Liberty family, because quite frankly, we need your help to keep doing what we're doing. And then we want to mention that we are going to be offering Dr. Dennis Cuddy's book, and we're trying to raise the support to actually reprint that book. There are going to be 30 books to the case, and for a suggested gift of $149.95 plus shipping, why, you can get a case. You have to order it right now, and then once we've raised sufficient support, we're going to be printed. It's almost 300. I think it's about 280 pages. Has a great index in it. It has an epilogue, brings you right up to date to the present time. But Secret Records Revealed is one of the most jam-packed books as far as facts and information that help you to be able to explain to other people what's really going on in the world. So if you're interested in knowing more about Dr. Cuddy's excellent book, which we would like to get reprinted, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Then we want to remind you about our all-day seminar on the 29th of October. That's the 29th of October of this month. It's a Sunday at Aptos Seascape Golf Course. But if you're interested in coming and hearing Constance Cumbie and Chris Pinto, who directed and produced the award-winning film The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and a great lineup of other guests, why, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. Since we'll be serving lunch, we have to know who's coming, how many are going to be there. And then, of course, if you'd like to know more about the Muslim faith, we carry a book called The Prophet of Doom. And we have a four-tape set that goes with that, my interviews with the author, who incidentally is in hiding because, of course, his life has been threatened. At least we haven't been able to talk to him for some time. And that's Islam, the Religion of Doom. It's a four-tape set, fascinating four-tape set, which we recommend. Because, of course, The Prophet of Doom is almost 1,000 pages long. It's really encyclopedic, but it has everything there from the Hadith and from the Quran. There are several other books that are the basic fundamentals of Islam. But this doesn't mean that the average Muslim is a wicked or evil person. Although there is a growing militancy, and my fear is that when we attack Iran, and if we attack Syria, and of course on the list are all the other Muslim countries there that are not democracies, because we're intent upon spreading democracy, not freedom, ladies and gentlemen, but democracy. Remember, America was never formed as a democracy. We were a republic. And of course, as James Madison wrote, democracies have e'er been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have e'er been incompatible with personal security or private property, and are usually as short in their life as they have been violent in their deaths. And that's what we're spreading throughout the world. And you have to ask yourself why. And to understand why, you need to get my main newsletter. We'll be glad to send it to you. It takes you into the Trilateral Commission, which controls the government today. And, of course, if you get into the background of the Trilateral Commission, you have to understand their logo. You can get it at the Internet at trilateral.org. That's trilateral.org. But let me suggest that you look at their logo, and you look very closely. You'll see it's a circle made up of three sixes with an upside-down broken cross in the middle. So we'd be glad to send you a free copy of our main newsletter if you call us at 1-800-544-8927. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get the videos we carry, like Rape of the Soul, or They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. Let me again suggest that great book by our good friend Father Malachi Martin, Hostage to the Devil. We're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And we'll be back in just a moment here for the next hour of Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and of course this evening our guest is Andrew Skousen from World Affairs Brief, and he's one of the researchers who posts those great articles up on the internet every morning, and of course I start my morning going through my emails. And then, of course, I go through newswithviews.com. That's newswithviews.com. And you'll find some of the most fascinating articles from all over the world posted there. I mean, from the India Gazette and from from the Southeast Asia News and from news services that are in Europe and in England. And you're going to get the material you will not get off of the controlled media in the United States. And then, of course, they also go to World Net Daily some of the other News with Views. But World Affairs Brief, to me, is one of the finest outlets of information. And with that as a background, Andrew Skousen, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. It's a pleasure to be on with you again.
Well, tell us what we're going to be talking about this evening.
Well, there's actually quite a bit to talk about this evening. There's a lot of really neat tidbits in the news, but the two major stories that I'd like to talk about today is more evidence about the events of 9/11 surrounding the World Trade Centers, as well as some of the difficult and dangerous terror legislation that is being proposed and being ramrodded through Congress lately. But let's start with the World Trade Center. Earlier this past week, in fact, it was the Friday before last, President Bush mentioned sort of an interesting remark on one of his press statements at a press conference at the White House. He said he was quoting from some information that supposedly they had elicited from Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who is, as far as we know, still kept captive by the U.S. government. And he said during this press conference, for example, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed described the design of planned attacks of buildings inside the U.S. and how operatives were directed to carry them out. That is valuable information for those of us who have the responsibility to protect the American people. He told us the operatives had been instructed to ensure that the explosives went off at a point that was high enough to prevent people trapped above from escaping.
Now, this is in the building. They were going to put their explosives in the building at a very high level so that people couldn't get out of the building. Is that right?
Well, that's what it seems to indicate. If you take what he said literally, that's exactly what he said. He used the word explosives, which seems to indicate that in fact explosives were planted in the building. And there's,
well, because what building is he talking about? That's the question.
Right. He is talking about the World Trade Center towers, the Twin Towers.
And that we can sort of assume that because he's only been involved in bombings of two buildings. The first was the World Trade Center back in 1993, and the second he was supposedly the mastermind of the bombing of the World Trade Center in 2001, September 2001. So that was a very interesting statement.
It was. And a fair amount is being made about that statement. I have a feeling, though, that given the quality of President Bush's presentation, that in fact he merely meant to say the word explosions instead of explosives, which would be consistent.
You can't wonder if they're maybe just trying to confuse us. Yeah. Well, Andrew, why don't you pick the story up there?
All right. Well, we're talking about some of the evidence that is coming out about the World Trade Center. Throughout the investigation of this, it seemed like the story that the government was saying about these two planes that attacked the building, causing this tremendous inferno in these couple of stories where they crashed into, and then the subsequent weakening of the top structure of the building, leading to the pancaking and collapsing of the building all the way to the ground, was going to be generally accepted by people. But increasingly, there's been some very interesting evidence that is starting to be put together and pieced together little by little by people. For instance, PrisonPlanet.com quoted Forbes and other publications who quoted some of the individuals who worked in the World Trade Center towers up to and including the weeks before the collapse of the two towers. Two of these people are quoted. Their names are Ben Fountain and Scott Forbes, who both worked in the Twin Towers. And it says that they are on record as saying that there were numerous evacuations and power downs of the Twin Towers in the weeks leading up to the attack, more so than would be usually expected for a high-profile building. Now, why is this information important? It's because many people say that it's impossible that these could have been wired with explosives because it requires such a large amount of access to things that you have to have access to so many floors, and it requires so much time to plant these kinds of explosives. Well, this is possibly an explanation for how that was done. They continue with their quote. They say, "How could they let this happen?" Meaning the power downs. They knew this building was a target. Over the past few weeks, we'd been evacuated a number of times, which is unusual. The power down, which took place the weekend before the attack, was, quote, unprecedented, and required a shutdown of the top 50 floors of the South Tower. The reason for the shutdown was given as, quote-unquote, recabling. The power outage meant that many of the ordinary building features were not operating, such as the security locks on the doors, cameras, lighting, etc.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Andrew Skousen from A World Affairs Brief. And Andrew is simply pointing out that there's a great deal of information coming out now that certainly in the weeks leading up to the 9/11 attack, why the towers were evacuated on several occasions. The whole areas were shut down. Nobody could go in it other than the technicians who were checking something or other, and this had happened at the top 50 floors of the South Tower. When was that done?
That was done the very weekend before the attack.
All right, fine. So this is unprecedented. Nothing like this had happened before, and we have to ask what was really going on. It's all certainly circumstantial evidence, but nobody seems to have inquired into this, and certainly not either the Joint Intelligence Committee that investigated the 9/11 in 2002, nor the Line 11 Commission that investigated in 2003 and 2004. So pick up the story there.
That's right. Well, it's very interesting. More and more of these pieces get put together. To continue with this quote from Forbes magazine, Forbes said that the sight of strange men in overalls going in and out of the building with tools was highly unusual, and that the coincidence of it occurring days before the attack was highly suspicious. Forbes is adamant that the men in overalls performing the recabling operations were ethnically diverse and by no means largely Arab.
Now, Chris, when did this article appear in Forbes, you recall? Is this in the last week or so?
I'm not sure. It was actually quoted by PrisonPlanet.com.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
Yeah, but this ties in with another video that our researchers uncovered that has some very good evidence that it presents. It particularly talks about that there was many eyewitnesses he said that there was a lot of gray dust in the World Trade Center offices in the week prior to the attacks. Now, the reason given for the dust was that there was remodeling of several of these upper floors, supposedly to remodel them for new tenants. But no new tenant contracts have been found for these floors that were supposedly being remodeled for them. Also, it's interesting that even though this was a occasional occurrence in the World Trade Center towers that they would remodel floors for new tenants, never had dust or debris gotten into the ventilation system such that it had affected other floors before, which was the case that a lot of people were complaining about in the weeks before the bombing. There was also vacant floors were completely off limits, even to staff of the World Trade Center, and there was a hub of construction activity. There was heavy pneumatic drilling, and machinery was heard working on steel. Obviously, normal remodeling affects just the basic substructure, sheetrock, and finish work mostly. There should be no reason for heavy drilling into the main structural members of things. Also, the video points out some pictures of the base columns after the debris was removed, showing a high-angled cut in a steep breaking angle, which is a typical thing that you would see if there was a demolition procedure that had occurred with a building. They shear it off at a high angle so that the steel slides past itself. This evidence continues to pile up about the idea that there was explosives planted inside of these buildings to help bring them down. There's a great deal of information on the internet, much of which can't be readily explained. Now, of course, there have been large numbers of competent people who have been paid by the government to go through and analyze these collapses and analyze the buildings. It's interesting that the NISTB, which came out with the final reports on most of these buildings as they came down, reported on the collapse of each one of these buildings, and their analysis generally reflects the standard government line. Except it's interesting to note that even the NISTB, which is trying its best to cover up any evidence that might indicate that there were explosives in the building and not address them specifically, when it gets to the analysis of World Trade Center Building 7, which you and I talked about last week on the show, they can't bring themselves to conclude that it was brought down by fire, which is of course the official government story, but they say that it's inconclusive, that it's the first time in the history that it's happened before. In fact, I was doing some research on this myself because structural failure is a very interesting aspect of my career. But they said
you are an engineer, aren't you?
That's right. I'm working as a structural engineer right now, and there have been several major fires in the history of steel framed buildings, such as World Trade Center 7. Building 7, which was a 47-story tall structure, is an extremely tall structure that did receive damage from the collapse of World Trade Center Building 7, and you can see the corners of it that received superficial damage. It's not known how much damage was done down into the bottom center of it, but it clearly wasn't enough to bring down the entire building like it did. Especially, what was it, 7.5 hours after the two other World Trade Center towers collapsed. There was fires that were shown in several of the floors that burned and then gutted out. Many of them had stopped burning by the time it actually collapsed. And in the history of these types of structures, for instance, there was a steel-structured hotel in South America. I believe it was in Buenos Aires or Chile. And it said the fire had actually burned through 28 floors of this tall structure without causing any kind of collapse. Like I said, it's the first example of this kind of building coming down of its kind.
Well, of course, the thing is, there have been other buildings that have come down very, very similar, but they've all been controlled demolition. And I think that's true. The thing is that the speed of the fall, you know, obviously, no matter how much hit the top and the sides of the building, it wasn't the tops or the sides of the building gave way. The whole base of the building gave way symmetrically. All at one time, the building fell in about 6.5 seconds, 6.6 seconds, into its own shadow. Is exactly with a controlled demolition. And the same way that those twin towers fell, I mean, they would not fall at that speed. There would be some resistance to the collapse simply because of the steel membranes. And what would have happened even if it had fallen, as they say, Andrew? What about the vertical steel pillars? There are 47 of them there holding up the center of the building, which is the main stability. Why would those collapse, you know? And why wouldn't some of those still be standing?
You know, you bring up a good point, because the World Trade Center buildings were built with kind of this steel spine that was up the center, which was kind of surrounding the center core, which housed the elevators. If there had been kind of a pancaking collapse, what you would have expected to see was pancaking down a couple of floors, at which point it sort of would have looked like a sloping cone at that point, with the center pillars being the largest point of resistance, slowly resisting the pancaking of these. It is plausible that as it came down and the floors above it collapsed and all of their weight collapsed on the floors below it, that they would collapse the outside ring, which was supported on exterior columns, which are weaker than the center ones, and it probably would have created kind of a cone of debris. But I'm confident that it would have stopped and slowly shed itself off to the side, and debris and material would have fallen off to the side rather than continuing to collapse straight down in one solid mass. You don't see kind of the cascading effect. I mean, the entire building came down at the speed of the falling debris, if you watch the videos, which is very odd. Usually you would see the debris passing the points of everything else as it slowly collapsed chunk by chunk down on each floor, and you should be able to see a step-by-step failure of each floor, which was not visible in any of the videos.
All right, fine. Well, our guest is Andrew Skousen. We're talking about, of course, the tragedy that occurred on September 11th. And, of course, the tragedy is nobody ever asks why Building 7 came down. They get discussing all sorts of other things. And why did they put out orders that nobody was to evacuate the Southern Tower? And when people tried to get out, they were ordered to go back. You know, they were almost down on the street. They were ready to go back saying, well, people try to get out, they're going to get injured. Well, the people that didn't get out died. And there's all sorts of excuses given, but nobody ever asked how, you know, you could have these flaming infernos and what of the passports could have survived. Will you pick up the story there, Andrew?
Yes, sir. I I wanted to point out a couple of other things about the collapse of Building 7, World Trade Center Building 7. And that is, I've watched the video several times of its collapse, and it's interesting because unlike the official story, which says that external damage from falling debris of the other World Trade Center towers, the two towers that came down, damaging the bottom of it and the front facade and then subsequent fires, you would expect the fires to weaken the exterior structure and have some portion of the front of it fall off. In fact, the exact opposite case happened. It appeared that very little of the structure was affected except for the very center supporting columns. If you watch the video, there's sort of a subsection of a penthouse that sits on top of it, and it sits inside of the middle, set back from the edges of the building. And as the building collapses, the first thing you see to disappear is that penthouse. The penthouse actually disappears into the building with the rest of the facade holding up its own shape. And if you watch one of the videos closely, you see little puffs of debris come out as the penthouse falls down through the top stories. What's interesting to notice, though, is that the puffs of smoke, instead of coinciding with the collapse of the penthouse as it falls downward floor by floor, you actually see these little puffs of smoke progress upwards, up the side of the building. Stephen Jones, from a mechanical engineering professor at the University of Brigham Young, BYU, in Utah, actually has pointed out this fact, and he says that these puffs of smoke are actually what they call squibs, which are little signs of exterior explosives as they explode on the side of the building. Historically, of course, the explanation for these squibs or puffs of smoke was that they were just occasioned by the debris pancaking through the floors and then shooting air and dust out the windows. But if you look at this video, you will definitely see that it progresses upward up the building against the fall of the penthouse as it falls through the building, which is what happens with a controlled demolition. You actually see the explosive charges explode as they go up the building. So it seems very clear, and the official report on it actually steps you through the collapse of the building, and the collapse of the building takes place at the interior strongest columns first. The strongest columns fail first, bringing the whole rest of the building down inside of it in sort of an inverted pyramid type shape, which is, of course, the safest way to bring down a implosion of a building. You take the center core down and collapse all of the exterior sides of it inward, which means that they sort of act like a fence to guard against debris while the center portion is falling down, and then the whole building caves in.
But as you look at those buildings come down, what you're really seeing... Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking with Andrew Skousen from A World Affairs Brief about Building Number 7. And people will try to get you into all sorts of discussions on the Twin Towers and what happened to Flight 93 and what hit the Pentagon, and ignore that, because we don't know any of these things. We can conjecture on it, but we don't know. But we do know that if you look at Building 7 coming down, first of all, as Andrew said, you see the penthouse begin to fall into the upper floor. Then you see these puffs of smoke coming out from the side of the building. And then the very base of the building explodes. Now, we don't see the entire base of the building, but we can see most of the building, and the building explodes from the... in other words, the bottom gives way, and the building descends into its own shadow, into its own substance, exactly as you would see with any controlled demolition. And this is exactly what it looks like. And the government can't explain why it came down, and neither can anybody else. And you get into this discussion, believe me, they will always take you off into something else. They will always ask you a question. Stick with Building 7. Stick with the passport. Stick with why did they lie about the military exercises that morning that, you know, showed that they... you know, they were simulating planes crashing into buildings. Who was it who was putting the false images up on the television screen at FAA and NORAD? Those are the things they don't want to look at. And why did both the first and the second investigations totally ignore the military exercises that morning that confused the air traffic controllers and NORAD, and that's why there are no planes guarding our nation's capital? So pick the story up there, Andrew.
Well, that's a very good summary, Dr. Sand. I'd like to bring up two more points about this that I found during my research into this. And, by the way, one of the most honest evaluations of all of the theories up until now that I found was on the online encyclopedia called Wikipedia, which has a site about the conspiracy theories surrounding 9/11 and the World Trade Centers. And they do, in my opinion, an excellent job of trying to present a clear picture of what the arguments for and against this are. And there's a fair amount of discussion going on right now among some of the researchers for Wikipedia. A lot of them are trying to get them to cut this article out of the encyclopedia because of its nature dealing with conspiracy. So
it presents both sides, and they don't want the American people to hear anything but the official government conspiracy theory.
That's right. That's right. But one of the links showed an article presented by one of the researchers that was actually paid by the government to go through, and he had access to the materials from the World Trade Centers, which he used to analyze to try to determine what the temperatures were of the steel on the floors where the airplanes hit, and he found something very interesting. He found through chemical analyses of the paint as well as the chemical structure of the steel, that the temperatures reached there were not as high as they expected them to be, not high enough, in his opinion, to cause the subsequent structural collapse.
Now, was this the gentleman who was employed by the government or what?
It's true, actually. He was. The link from Wikipedia actually takes you to a PowerPoint presentation that he delivered, which is full of graphs and charts about the various molecular materials and microscopic shapes, and what happens with steel when it passes a certain temperature and starts to deform. The molecular structure of portions of it actually changes, and that should be visible. And he pointed out that was not visible in the girders that came from the floors where the planes hit.
Well, I suggest that people go to that website on Wikipedia and pull it down, because I will tell you, I've been up on the Internet trying to follow the information from Professor Stephen Jones, who's part of the Scholars for Truth movement, and you go to his website, the websites, and they link you directly to Stephen Jones' articles, and they're not there. And eventually, of course, you can find them at the, Scholars for 911 something or other, the Journal of 911 Studies, you'll find it there, but so many of the links are gone. Now, who is it that's powerful enough to go up on the Internet and pull links down and make them disappear, or make articles disappear out of newspapers? We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Andrew Skousen from World Affairs Brief. Go ahead, Andrew. Pick the story up.
All right. Well, the last point that I'd like to make about the World Trade Center towers is that a controlled demolition sequence always happens in essentially two stages. First is to take out the building's largest load-bearing columns and members. Basically, you take out the foundation supports. You eliminate everything that's the most critical structure first. And what is interesting to watch about controlled demolitions is that the building will actually stay up for a limited time when this happens. Buildings are built to be redundant, such that if one support fails, the rest of the building is meant to take up some of the slack and still keep most of the building up. So the two-step process is essentially to take out the most important pillars and columns or foundation members first, and then take out the rest of the building with charges on all of the superficial members. And it's very interesting to watch. Like I said, here in Las Vegas, you see controlled demolitions happen frequently, and you can actually watch the charges explode off of the largest members first and watch the buildings stay there for a second or two until they set off the rest of the charges. With the World Trade Center towers, the best theory for how they were demolished right now, in my opinion, is that thermite charges were used on the interior columns. Now, thermite isn't actually a quick explosion, so to speak. It's actually kind of a very hot burning explosion meant specifically to melt structural steel. And when thermite burns, it burns so hot, especially in combination with sulfur, that it will actually melt the steel down to completely liquid forms. Which is of course what you absolutely want in a controlled demolition.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment.
Yeah.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Andrew Skousen. He's talking about the controlled demolition techniques that are used by people who first take buildings down. And certainly, if you analyze what happened to the North and South Tower, there's no way that they could have fallen that rapidly. There was absolutely no resistance. Something had to destroy all the inherent resistance of those 47 or so of vertical steel members that made up the core of the spine of this building. And where were they? I mean, why weren't they standing there? If all the other things fell down, why weren't the spine still standing there? I mean, the steel doesn't just dissolve by itself. But, of course, the biggest question is, why did Building 7 come down? And they don't want to talk about Building 7. They want to talk about, all this idea that, why, of course, everybody knows that the aircraft hit the Pentagon, and these people who think it was a missile. And I don't know what hit the Pentagon. All I know is that they're trying to confuse us with all sorts of information and websites, and I've seen these websites just disappear. And I've seen articles disappear out of the newspaper. I've seen them change the transcript of the Council on Foreign Relations of meetings that were held just two or three days after the 9/11 attack and delete whole segments that expose what this was really all about. And I'm speaking specifically of Senator Gary Hart's remarks on the 14th of September. We have the video clip of what he said, and somebody went onto their webpage and just deleted what he said from the transcript. So there's obviously somebody is out there trying to change our reality. Who it is, I don't know. We have 14 intelligence agencies, 14 different intelligence agencies with unlimited funds working here in the United States. I really doubt that Osama bin Laden controls any of them. Anyway, go right ahead there, Andrew.
Well, you're right, and the truth is that the internet error file 404 or internet error 404 file not found increasingly pops up as you try to click on links and navigate your way around the internet, and it's rather frustrating as a researcher, I can tell you.
That's why if you get one of these files, copy it. Do not leave it, because it may not be there the next time you go. And who is getting these things and pulling them down off the Internet? The people who are doing everything they can to keep the American people from knowing the truth. And what is the truth? Well, of course, that's what they don't want you to find out. Go ahead, Andrew.
That's a very good point, Dr. Stan. In fact, Wikipedia, this online encyclopedia that I found a lot of my research sources on, actually is starting to copy in PDF form most of the information that they find on the internet to be able to have a link within their own website to all of this information, because it keeps disappearing. And it was there that I was able to finally find Stephen Jones's research and his writings about things, which I thought was very interesting.
Really, very good. You can get that, at least you could earlier this week, on the Journal of 911 Studies. That's www.journal911studies. And Dr. Stephen Jones' work is fascinating. And the other articles in the Journal of 911 Studies are fascinating. But if you don't know where to look, you'll never find it, because all the other links that would lead you there are gone.
It's true. And Dr. Jones is research is quite good. It presents some very compelling evidence that isn't easily swept away. And in fact, as we talked about last time, the critics of Stephen Jones were fairly held at bay until they actually convinced him to come out with some kind of interpolating remarks about who is behind this then and what is the motive of the person who brought down the towers, before he was speaking in a strictly academic point, saying, all I'm doing is presenting the evidence, here it is, draw your own conclusions about this. They convinced him to give some conclusions, which aren't hard to come to, that it must have been someone who had very open access to the World Trade Centers and obviously access to covering it up, which only leads to the government who is financing everything and who received most of the benefit in both the wars and all of the anti-terrorism bills which are being out there and getting passed because of this. But what I wanted to get to is this last point of evidence, which I wasn't convinced of until I started to research it on my own, and that is that there was, after they were cleaning up the debris from the World Trade Centers, what they kept finding was melted, molten, yellow, red-hot, gleaming metal that they were pulling out of the bottom of the World Trade Center. And if you watch some of the original news releases from the cleanup period, you will actually see tractors and bulldozers and cranes pulling up pieces of metal that are actually dripping with glowing red hot metal, which was still down at the base of these core columns, where the core columns used to be, at least.
And Andrew, maybe you can explain this for me, because I saw those pictures and I had this uneasy feeling that somehow we're being manipulated. How could you keep steel red hot for, you know, two or a day, much less maybe many weeks? How in the world would it be possible to keep steel molten over a period of any time? You would think as soon as the initial igniting factor was gone, that the steel would begin to cool off. Can you explain that for me?
Well, I'm not sure myself, I'll be honest with you.
I mean, could it be that they doctored those things, they doctored those pictures, or is it that thermite would actually, or thermate that they used, would cause it to be molten over a period of many hours or days? Or could they have planted this whole thing in an effort to confuse us?
You know, it's obviously always a a possibility. I believe that there is a great deal of misinformation that is out there, and you have a very good point. Steel does transfer heat very quickly, and consequently it radiates heat outward quite quickly as well. And so unless there is some kind of continuing ongoing reaction with the thermite, where the thermite continues to burn and keep it hot, it would be very strange for it to stay red hot over a period of days, for sure. And it's a good point that you bring up, that many of the pictures that they were showing were of at least a day afterwards, when they were digging up the rubble there and showing these. But there are also pictures of pools of it after it had cooled,
right,
which are which of course fits into that. And in either case, it's not absolutely critical how it necessarily came down. But Stephen Jones has obtained some samples from the site of the World Trade Center, and has chemically analyzed them and found to have chemical properties of thermite. And
I think he's a very, very courageous man. He's actually been put on administrative leave by Brigham Young University. Obviously, anybody who questions the official story is going to have tremendous pressure put on him, because think of the implications. If, you know, this was some sort of an intelligence operation, and if there's been a cover-up, and if both the initial Joint Intelligence Committee investigation and the 911 Commission, you know, were covering up the truth, think of the implications. That means that somebody killed almost 3,000 Americans, and they've never been tried for it. Incidentally, it's very interesting. A number of CIA agents now are taking out a private insurance to defend themselves in court, and one of the reasons were, at least listed in the paper, was they were concerned about what had happened on 911. What do they know about 911 that we don't? Please pick up the story there.
No, you're absolutely right about that story. And there are a great number of people. Most of them, in fact, are CIA operatives that are taking out liability insurance. They are afraid that some of the interrogations and things that they have been doing to people on behalf of the CIA are going to be made free and possibly make it to court and take, you know, and sue these same people, and rightly so. And so it's very interesting that people are actually really afraid about this. This leads to a discussion about the legislation that is currently trying to be pushed through Congress by President Bush, which the first of it talks about the ability to interrogate terrorists and some of the guidelines and rules about how and when they will be taken to court. And interestingly enough, one of the measures of the bill says that it is meant to provide a further measure of protection from war crimes liability for U.S. interrogators. The text further declares that no foreign or international sources of law shall supply a basis for rule of decision in the courts of the United States in interpreting the prohibitions enumerated. Essentially, what they're trying to do is write into law protections against themselves from war crimes tribunals. And as you saw recently with the outcry in the UN, people are already bringing up this point with President Bush. And it seems that the people are actually afraid of this monster that they're creating. In my opinion, the war crimes tribunal, the international UN court, is a monster that even U.S. officials are starting to become afraid of and feeling like they have to protect themselves against with these, you know, atrocious acts that they're committing supposedly on behalf of the war on terror.
And, of course, we've found recently in Argentina, some of the generals there have been actually tried and sent to prison for life for crimes that they committed against humanity back in the 70s, 1970s. Here in Chile, Pinochet is on trial for supervising the murder of the communists there when they took over. I mean, maybe you don't like communists, but you don't have to kill them. You know, you can put them in prison, but you shouldn't be killing them, and you shouldn't be torturing people. And where is the outcry from our religious leaders in America about the use of torture? Have you heard any of our major religious leaders who we put our confidence in speaking out against torture? And they have been torturing people. In fact, Italy is trying to get subpoenas to actually extradite some 10 CIA officials who kidnapped a gentleman on the streets of as I remember, Rome, or anyway, out of Italy, and sent him off to be tortured in one of these prisons. And they're going after these CIA agents, and of course, our government doesn't want to turn them over. But are we to totally ignore international law? Are we above law? Are our leaders above the law? And what about God's law? Does God give permission to torture people? Where is the outcry from our Christians about this? And it's muted in its silence.
That's right. And it's muted and silent because most of the Christians are trying to, or most of the leaders of these churches are intent on not openly attacking, which is what they would have to do. They would have to basically open attack President Bush and the CIA. And with the way that the media spins the stories and plays heavily on the lightest aspects of torture that come to light, and then describing all of the rest of the terrible acts of torture that are commonplace, and that if you examine the evidence, must be condoned by all of the higher-ups in the military, these acts are just portrayed as rogue acts, as rogue agents, as people who will be prosecuted for stepping out of the bounds. It's incredibly interesting. And yet, after you watch a story like that, you look at the legislation that President Bush is trying to pass now, which would essentially make President Bush the sole arbiter of the meaning of the Geneva Convention and would bar litigants such as detainees from invoking the conventions in habeas or civil actions in federal courts. This of course, essentially grants king-type powers to the president of our country. It's getting rather scary how many powers we are trying to entitle the government to, and especially the president. The president actually complained about the restrictions and vagueness of the Geneva Convention against torture.
And first, one of the things that really bothers me, he said we would never condone torture, we would never allow torture, and we want legislation through to allow us to torture. Now, you can't have it both ways. If you would never allow torture, and then, of course, it's almost like, well, what is the meaning of is? I mean, what does the meaning of torture really mean? I mean, what is torture, you know? Let's debate about torture. I think pretty well know what torture is. It's laid out in the Geneva Convention. And now the Bush administration is challenging that and saying, well, it's perfectly all right for us to do it. We have to do this to protect our people. And we're here to protect you. I was elected to protect the American people, and I don't care what we have to do, we're going to protect the American people. The question is, are we really protecting the American people, or are we destroying the moral foundation of this once great Christian nation?
It's absolutely right. Senator Lindsey Graham, a Republican of South Carolina, put it in perspective. He said that the Bush administration is asking us to, quote, trust us. You're guilty. We're going to execute you, but we can't tell you why. And illustrates what this legislation is trying to get passed. One of the proponents of the legislation says in one of the points that defense lawyers would be able to see the evidence against their clients. But that's not true. The fine print actually says that they're entitled only to see a summary, which won't be specific enough to be allowed to challenge the validity of the source of the information against their client, which will, of course, be kept secret.
Let's get your webpage out there right now. How can people get the World Affairs Brief?
Certainly. People can log on to www.worldaffairsbrief.com, and there they can find links to all of the daily news stories we think are important and also how to subscribe to the World Affairs Brief.
And let me suggest that people subscribe to the World Affairs Brief. It's a very minimal charge. It's something you want to read every week. Joel Skousen does a magnificent job of summarizing the news for you. It will really help you to see what's going on. Well, Andrew, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up this evening's program. Go right ahead.
Wow, that's going to be a little bit difficult. Let me just touch on what I think are a couple of very interesting facts that have come out in the news that we found in our research with the World Affairs Brief. One of these is that it appears that President Bush is preparing to support global warming. Global warming is a hot topic, and a poor one at that point, because this is one of those areas where I wish people would stop and look at the evidence for this, to take the time to do the research about global warming, because it is not as clear-cut as people make it out to be. There are a great number of very important factors that we do not yet know about this, and researchers and scientists around the globe are not of the same opinion about the extent of human effects on global warming. So what is most interesting about this is that President Bush appears to have done a U-turn on this. He seems to follow the increasing pressure from Republican governors such as Arnold Schwarzenegger and several mayors and leaders in Congress. At least that's what the official press is saying. In our opinion at the World Affairs Brief, we think that the change is actually coming from the global side of government, which we believe controls President Bush. And we believe that he's taking this turn, this U-turn, to be able to take away one of the points that the Democrats are hoping to have against President Bush in the midterm elections in November. So it's kind of a ploy, but it's clear that the powers that be are intent on using global warming, and it is becoming one of the most talked about issues here.
And of course, if they ever do put in the Kyoto Protocol, it will destroy the industrial capacity, the remaining industrial capacity of our nation, and lower the living standards of our people dramatically, because it will really stop so much energy production. It'll take 10 years to get nuclear power plants up. And the whole idea is to destroy the industrial infrastructure of America. If they're interested in global warming, why don't they do something about China? Because the Kyoto Protocol doesn't appear there. What about India, the big pollution in India? Why, it doesn't apply to those countries. And
that's
we're
right.
Out of time. God bless you. Thanks so much, and I hope we can get you back again next week.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. My pleasure to be with you, as always.
Good night. God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and I want to tell you that there really is global warming. In fact, the ice caps on both the North and the South Pole are melting on Mars. And do you really think that's because of man's polluting the environment by driving? Are they going to have to begin restricting automotive use and electric production on Mars? Of course not. It is all part of the normal solar cycles. We began the period of global warming in the 1860s, pardon me, in the 1600s, and we've been increasing ever since then. And that's why the snows of Kilimanjaro are receding, and that's why the global ice caps are melting. It has nothing to do with human activity, but this is an attack on the infrastructure of our society, and its ultimate destruction of America, because this will not apply to any other nation. And that's why our leaders, of course, certain of them, are pushing global warming. People like Al Gore, he was there back in 1992 when the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report and Agenda 21 were laid out on the good ship Britannia, Prince Charles's ship, there in preparation for the Second Earth Summit in 1992 in Rio de Janeiro, where the plan was laid out to destroy the economy of our nation. Understand, this is what it's about, is America's under attack, not from without, but from the traitors within, who have a different world vision. A different worldview. You need, of course, to read the Earth Charter. You need to get our material on sustainable development. It's available from Radio Liberty. If you'd like a free copy of the Earth Charter, we'll send it to you, but you can find it up on the Internet. Be sure to read point 10A about equitable distribution of wealth within nations, between nations. That's your wealth, ladies and gentlemen. That's your wealth that they intend to distribute. Redistribute not the Bush family's wealth or the Gore family's wealth, Or the wealth of so many of our multimillionaire senators and government leaders, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld. It's your wealth. They intend to impoverish our middle class and, of course, establish a feudal society, not only in America but throughout the world. And you have to understand, behind this are powerful spiritual forces. And this is, so much of this is coordinated by an organization known as the Trilateral Commission. Go to their website, look at their logo. It's a circle made up of three sixes, 666, joined in together in the middle by an upside-down broken cross. Look at it very closely. You'll see it there. We have the old logo of the World Trade Center, World of Future Society. They changed that when we began talking about it. It was a circle made up of three sixes. They love those numbers. I wonder what the significance is. 666. They understand the Bible. They believe in the Bible. They just worship a different God. Understand, we're involved in the spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Remember, we're putting on an all-day seminar on the October the 29th right here in this Monterey Bay area, and we hope many of you can come. And if you can come, then to hear Constance Cumby and Chris Pinto and Michael Shaw and Barrett Schoes and myself. And anyway, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Remember, we're trying to get to the point where we can republish Dennis Cuddy's very important book, Secret Records Revealed. That's Secret Records Revealed. Now, it's a new edition with an appendix. It actually has an update, an epilogue, and it's available by calling. Oh, and if you'd like to order a case now, and of course, for a suggested gift of $149.95 plus shipping, why, of course, we'll reserve one for you, but we have to have the orders before we're going to be able to actually do the printing. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If we can't get enough orders, we're not going to reprint it, but I really think we can. We've already have four or five already. So it's not going to be that difficult. We need to get this book in print. It will help you to convince others about the true nature of the spiritual battle we're engaged in and who's really behind it. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for my ministry of Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. If you'd like to get copies of any of our programs, of course, you can get them by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is truly at war today.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful blue globe floating through the void of God's creation, it is Wednesday, the 27th of September, 2006. And I know that after today's show, there are a lot of folks in Texas.